morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's main opposition accuses the ruling party of violence 2 days before the presidential election.
It has been supporters of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party and also some sectors of the security forces. They have been supporting the ruling party to perpetrate violence against members of the APC.
Older voters in Sierra Leone fear recurrent of election day violence. Residents of Deep Slough Township in Johannesburg go on a rampage against foreign nationals. A security analyst welcomes African Union troop reduction in Somalia. Zambian opposition claims government harassment. A judge in Liberia orders the release from police custody of a former chief justice.
Lawyers moved to pray the court for a writ of habeas corpus. That writ was granted, and the judge decided that the police had no justifiable legal reasons to further hold the former chief justice and the three other persons.
And UNHCR in Malawi observes World Refugee Day in silence. The stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone's main opposition, All People's Congress, the APC party, says police shot and killed one of its supporters on Wednesday near its headquarters in Freetown. According to VOA Stringard in the capital, the police have accused former combatants of firing at them with AK-47s and pistols. Sierra Leoneans will vote this Saturday in presidential and legislative elections. President Julius Maada Bio of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP, is being challenged by APC candidate Samura Kamara. Sidi Yaya Tunis is the National Publicity Secretary of the APC. He tells me that his party called Wednesday's protest to demand conditions for a free, fair, and credible elections this weekend.
The main opposition party, through the leadership, had called for a peaceful protest because they had certain issues with the handling of the elections by the Electoral Commission Sierra Leone. The opposition still does not have the actual voters register. They also are not satisfied with an application that the Electoral Commission wants to use to transmit elections results, an app that has not been tested, an app that has not been used before, and an app that was not piloted for the opposition to be comfortable with. And then also, as I speak, I'll say almost the entire Southeast is being cut off from the opposition as far as elections participation are concerned. And that is because our party office in Bull, for example, has been burned. Several of our membership, our polling agents have been beaten and kicked out of their homes in the southern and eastern part of the country. And so it is not safe for them at the moment. So they call for a peaceful protest today.
Who is responsible for this violence? The government says it's your party that is instigating the violence. Who do you think is responsible?
I mean, it could not be our party. It has been supporters of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party and also some sectors of the security forces. They have been supporting the ruling party to perpetrate violence against members of the APC. And in fact, they don't just stop at that. They also go into homes of the APC members. They arrest them and then they hand them over to the police and they are locked up. It is the police that is supposed to be arresting people, but civilians are arresting people and handing them to the police on frivolous charges, and then the police will just lock them up.
Let me ask you, because there are a few days to go before the election. There are those who say your party is not capitalizing on some economic problems in the country. Instead, you are talking about voter registration or voter list. They are wondering, why did you not do this before 4 days to go before the election?
We have campaigned extensively across this country with compelling messages hinging on the economy, creating employment, and also investing in our people, education, health. We have all these compelling messages, and we know we have the numbers to win these elections. And that is why it is a strategy of the ruling party to ensure that the increased violence on our people in the southern and eastern parts of the country, so that they are prevented from voting. All we are asking for is a level playing field, that is one, and for the Electoral Commission to ensure that they conduct the elections in a manner that is transparent, that is free, fair, and credible.
So you are certain that the APC will be in the election on Saturday?
Well, we have put forward certain demands. We are still in talks with the ECSL, Electoral Commission Sierra Leone, and the security forces. Hopefully, we'll have all of our affairs sorted out, and then we'll participate in these elections.
Sidi Yaya Tunis is the National Publicity Secretary of the opposition, All People's Congress Party of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Older voters who lived through the Civil War from 1991 to 2002 say they are concerned that the youth who rioted last August in protest of the country's economic challenges may resort to violence. Sinanu Toward reports from Freetown on a door-to-door campaign by older voters aimed at maintaining the peace on election day.
Khalil Mara was only 8 years old when rebels invaded his family home in 1991 during the Sierra Leonean Civil War. He recounts how his aunt was killed in his presence and his village burned down. Mara says they cut off my aunt's breast, both of them, and she bled to death. He says they beat them up with ropes and canes and burned down our houses. My uncle offered to give them money and cattle, he says, but they refused. They said they wanted his life, so they shot him too. Like Mara, many other Civil War survivors do not want a repeat as voters head for the polls. Some citizens say the youth have been agitated since a protest last August turned bloody and took the lives of more than 25 people. Fatou Bewa is a teacher in Freetown. She says many of her neighbors are fleeing to the countryside to avoid being caught up in violent disturbances.
If this will not win this election, we'll go first, we'll not go green.
She says some youth are saying they are ready to fight if they don't win the election. She says some say the last elections were not credible, so they are ready to defend this year's election at all costs. The Residual Special Court Interactive Forum is a consortium of more than 100 civil society organizations, and they say some political aspirants are seeking to stir up trouble. They have therefore targeted potential hotspots for violence to campaign for peace and counter what they say is misinformation and unethical campaigning by some presidential candidates. Patrick James Tucker is the representative of the Residual Special Court Interactive Forum.
Because we want to make sure that our elections are very peaceful, so we are going out to tell the history of the world, to tell the history of violence, the effects of violence. Because young people who didn't know were the ones who took part in the insurrection last year.
Sierra Leone's national security officials say data available to them shows a significant reduction in this year's election violence as compared to 2018's. They say only 14 cases of minor disturbances, such as destruction of opposition campaign materials, were recorded between April and the end of May. They say there have been some cases of arson in the last few weeks, but say that everything is under control. Abdul Karim Will, a spokesman for Sierra Leone's Office of National Security.
The military will be coming to support the police, but their intervention will be exclusively limited to static deployments and mobile patrols, just so that we are certain that in the event that a situation of security wants to degenerate, the military will be hand in hand to support its counterpart, the Sierra Leone police.
As Sierra Leoneans prepare to vote, many are hopeful that the day will be peaceful. Sana Anutod for VOA News, Freetown.
A judge in Liberia has ordered the release from police custody of Gloria Mususkat, former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Liberia. This after her lawyers filed a writ of habeas corpus. The judge agreed that Justice Mususkat had been held in police custody without first being brought to court, according to Liberian law. There was an armed attack on the former Chief Justice's home in February, which included the stabbing death of her foster daughter. Moses Kat told VOA in March that the attack on her home was an attempt to assassinate her. Police took the former Chief Justice into custody on Tuesday morning. Yesterday, Wednesday, the police held a news conference to provide an update on their investigation into the death of Ms. Chalu Musu at the home of the former Chief Justice. Information Minister Legehu Reni tells me there was probable cause to charge the former Chief Justice and three other occupants of her home.
The police announced to the nation that they now had probable cause to charge and arrest former Chief Justice of the Republic of Liberia and three other accomplices and occupants of the home on the night of the murder of little Chalu Musu, one of the other occupants, the fifth occupant of the house owned by the former Chief Justice of Liberia.
When you say probable cause, was that presented to the public or that will be done in a court of law?
One of the things the police also said to do to justify its probable cause admission to the public today was that they had said to the public and to the media gallery that they have established that no other occupant of the house was present in that house on the night of February 22, 2023, when the murder took place. So they thought that those who were in the house at the time of the murder of little Chalu Musu were the ones responsible or knew exactly what happened to little Chalu Musu that caused her death.
So in addition to the former Chief Justice, the police intend to charge other people, therefore?
Yes, there are three other persons that the police really intends to charge along with the former Chief Justice.
In the meantime, the former Chief Justice has been, what, released to her family or to her lawyers?
During the announcement and the holding of the former Chief Justice overnight at the National Headquarters of the Police, her lawyers moved to the criminal court at the Temple of Justice to pray the court for a writ of habeas corpus. Under our laws, habeas corpus means to demand the living body of the individual held by the state. And so that writ was granted, and today the court hearing was heard at midday at the Temple of Justice. And the judge decided that the police had no justifiable legal reasons to further hold the former Chief Justice and the three other persons, and hence ordered their release to the lawyers.
Let me say, Ledgerhood, I spoke to one of the lawyers, and he also mentioned something about the condition under which the former Chief Justice was held, saying that she was placed in a cell with other people who he said may not have been prisoners.
I cannot validate that, but I can say to you clearly that the police is a responsible institution, and they are withholding cells at the Liberia National Police. Who the other occupants of the cells were, I do not know. But I do not believe that the police will, in open glare, try to place the former Chief Justice into a cell that will bring harm to her, especially when the world is watching this particular episode as we move to now the final stages of the investigation and on to trial.
Ledgerhood Reni is Liberia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 22nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Residents of Deep Sloot Township in Johannesburg have gone on a rampage, burning and destroying shacks belonging to foreign nationals that they accused of being criminals. This follows a string of killings in the area, which local residents accuse foreign nationals of committing. Residents called on President Cyril Ramaphosa to personally address the volatile situation and threatened to cause more damage. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The burning and destruction of shacks belonging to foreign nationals was triggered by the killing of community policing leader John Makule. He was fatally shot after responding to a robbery in which a shop owner was shot on the arm. His killing came shortly after several murders and robberies in the area, including a hold-up in which a woman was hit with a hammer on the head and her 15-year-old son was shot in the stomach. Hundreds of angry residents marched last night to protest the killings, accusing immigrants of committing the crimes, and began destroying homes of those they accused of being part of the crime syndicates. The attacks continued today. Community leader Lois Otoia told VOA that residents were forced to take the law into their hands because police had failed them.
We're not xenophobic in South Africa. It is a fact that the majority of crime that are committed in our community, it is illegal foreigners, to be specific, from Zimbabwe. We cannot call such people our brothers.
Howden Province Police Commissioner Elias Mawela explained why police were struggling to deal with crime in the area.
Undocumented people that came in numbers, that area, it is not accessible. That's why we had a lot of problem. And we have another area called Extension 1. That Extension 1 is just dark. Even when you walk during the night, you know, you have to stretch your hand to get touch somebody close to you.
He urged the community not to take the law into their own hands, but report all criminals to the police. In 2021, foreign nationals living in the area temporarily fled after locals burned alive Zimbabwean national Elvis Nyati, accusing him of committing crime. Subsequently, dozens of police and immigration officers were deployed to the area to deal with crime and illegal immigration. But residents say things have gotten worse. Community leaders told the media Wednesday evening that the protests have been suspended after a meeting with the presidency, where they've been assured that ministers will come down to address them. South Africa has one of the world's highest crime rates. It also has seen waves of anti-foreign violence in the past several years, in part as the economy has weakened and unemployment has risen to more than 30%. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
A security analyst says the choice of the African Union Transition Mission in Somalia, also known as ATMIS, to reduce its troops is the right decision because security in Somalia has improved recently. ATMIS said Wednesday that the drawdown was in fulfillment of a UN resolution to withdraw about 2,000 troops by June 30th. Mohamed Mubarak is the chairman of Hiral Institute, the security research and analysis organization for the Horn of Africa. He is also one of the authors of a recent report, The Dangers of Prematurely Lifting the Somali Arms Embargo. First, he tells me, the Somali government would have fallen in its early days had it not been for the presence of ATMIS. However, Mubarak says the drawdown is overdue.
The drawdown was the result of the transition that was signed by the former government, and it's been implemented by this one. And I think they had no choice, and they already delayed by 6 months the 2,000 that were supposed to leave in December 31st, and now they're leaving in June 30th. And I think security situation is stable right now, although it's still heightened in terms of security incidents, but still it's stable. So I don't see things happening too badly right now, but probably down the road.
You are saying that this is overdue, is that correct?
Yes, it's overdue, and it's been 17 years almost. I think donors also have fatigue, and Somali government needs to take the initiative. And a lot of things that are happening now should have happened 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But unfortunately, Somali government never expected this day to come. So it's not ready in any way, to be honest, to take over. Although the security situation is right now stable, and that gives us a false sense of security, we think that we will be able to take over security. But as you can see across the country, clans are already fighting each other, and it can only get worse from here.
Do you think, therefore, that the presence of the African Union mission, did it make any difference throughout the years that it was there?
Yes, it did. I think the Somali government would have lost to the insurgents about 16 years ago, had it not been for the African Union forces.
So the consequences of lifting arms embargo against Somalia, what are some of your concerns?
I think our main concern is that the government does not have an adequate accountability systems and control systems of the arms that it receives. We already see widespread selling of arms. We see arms markets all across Somalia. We see government forces deserting and selling their arms. So if arms embargo is lifted and the Somali government can import anything, we also have problems with the clan militias using government arms against each other. That will worsen. You will see worsening selling of arms across the region. So it's a very dangerous prospect.
But eventually, Somalia has to take over its own security. I mean, this is an argument. And the way to do so is to empower Somalia to be able to defend itself.
Yes, and that's a must. But right now, the Somali government is already able to import the kind of weapons it needs. And I think it's better armed than its opponents. So I don't know what the lifting of the arms embargo is going to achieve, except inundate the country with weapons that are not probably needed right now.
What do you suggest, therefore, should happen?
I think the Somali government should work on the governance systems. We still don't have a professional military. It's still mostly clan militias, except the special forces that are working under the Somali National Army. It's mostly clan militias, and they use government weapons to fight each other. I think those things need to be fixed. We need to have a professional military. We need to have control systems. The government should be able to control all ports of entry. Then we can consider lifting arms embargo.
Mohamed Mubarak is the chairman of Hiral Institute, the security research and analysis organization for the Horn of Africa. He was speaking with us from Mogadishu, Somalia. Zambian opposition party leaders have urged the government to stop using state agencies to harass opponents. The opposition alleges that the continued arrests, police brutality, and detention is not acceptable in a democracy. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
Speaking at the joint media briefing Monday, a gathering of more than 10 opposition leaders from various political parties vowed to continue fighting for freedom of expression. New Heritage Party leader Chishala Kateka said they are concerned with the continued arrests of opponents by state agents.
In the past few weeks, we have had a number of opposition political figures arrested, detained, brutalized, and just harassed or intimidated by one wing of the Zambia sector.
Like Kateka, Citizens First leader Harry Kalaba said the opposition will continue offering checks and balances to promote democracy.
Clearly, you can see that the democratic space in this country is fast shrinking. The moment you begin talking, they will want to begin finding reasons to gag you. We will not be stopped. We will choose to speak for the people of Zambia.
But the permanent secretary of the Ministry of Information and Media, Kennedy Kalunga, said the opposition claims are baseless. In a statement, Kalunga said law enforcement agencies in the country operate with the highest levels of professionalism and integrity and are guided by comprehensive protocols that ensure fair treatment of all individuals in custody. He reiterated the government's commitment to upholding the rights of every citizen, irrespective of their political affiliation. For VOA News, I'm Kathy Short in Lusaka, Zambia.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, for the first time on Tuesday, scaled back commemoration of World Refugee Day in Malawi after refugees called out the tough living conditions there. Malawi authorities have been forcefully relocating refugees into the Zaleka refugee camp, where refugees say there is inadequate shelter, food, and clean water. Lamech Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
In Malawi, in previous years, The day typically was commemorated by holding a special event with activities like dance presentations, displays from refugees, and speeches from government and UN officials. The theme for this year's commemoration is Hope Away From Home. It comes at a time, however, when the Malawi government is forcibly relocating refugees who stay outside Dzaleka, the country's only refugee camp. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
And that's it for this Thursday, June 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington saying, have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.